The following podcast may contain spoilers.
Russian President Boris Yeltsin's first words to U.S. President Bill Clinton upon meeting him in 1995 were, "Do you think O.J. did it?" Drew Barrymore table dance for David Letterman on his talk show, and, with her back to the audience, flash David by lifting up her shirt. Newsweek published an article scoffing the future of the internet. It laughed at the idea that people would get news, learn, or even buy airline tickets online. And the price of a ballpark hot dog was $1.49. The year is 1995, and this is Binge Movies. All right, I am joined once again by the illustrious producer of the show, the Reverend Combat Jones. How you doing, man?
I'm doing fine, trying to stay safe, trying to, you know, get through the world.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that. I try to get through these fucking movies. What do you think about 1995 as a year of film? Because we're now celebrating, of course, as this comes out, the 25th anniversary of this top 10. We just did 10 through 6 with our friend Colby Mack over at Colby Told Me. And you're filling in here. You're doing this one. We had our feature presentation review with our other friend, Kevin R. Brackett from The Real Spoilers. He talked about Toy Story and dropped quite a bit of knowledge on us about that film. He knows a lot. So if you haven't checked that out, it's worth a listen. And then we reviewed GoldenEye with Colby. You're filling in here at the end here.
God.
And not only that, well, let's start there. What do you think about 1995 as a year overall?
Not a good year to know what movie to invest your money in to go see at a theater.
Casper,
all the way.
Yeah.
There's a couple on this list that I really liked, but this year as a whole, top 10, not exactly a banner year.
Yeah. Which makes it interesting because as we've moved through the season, obviously with a little bit of a hiatus because of the state of the world, we started with the MCU. We started with binging the phase one of the MCU and, doing our deep dive review of, I don't even remember what fucking movie now, Iron Man?
Yeah, it was Iron Man. Yeah. How it all began.
Yes. Yeah, how it all began, right? Then, we've done our What the Fuck movies with Paul from the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast. Movies like Xanadu, The Apple, Tiptoes, Mac and Me. And
in the podcast of a lifetime.
Yeah, in the podcast of a lifetime. Starring Paul from the Countdown.
And a guest appearance.
Here's the thing, though. Okay? On our next episode, we're going to do a special season finale ranking elimination death match episode.
That's right.
And on that episode, we are going to defend our shortlist. You don't really have a short list.
I have a real short list.
You've got two of Pat's picks. You've got one of Colby's picks. You've got one of Paul's picks.
Which
and
is...
then now one of your own.
Get one of my
from
own.
This episode.
That's right.
So whatever your number one is, that gets added to your short list from this episode. Now I have mine because I've been here the whole season. I've been the stable genius of this podcast through thick and thin.
You have been. I will happily take those lists on. Some of the movies I agree with.
So here's the thing is, I you don't have any idea what my number one is for this week, and you don't have any idea. I don't have any idea what your number one's going to be. And once we're done with this episode, we're going to go to episode 77. We're going to do battle and determine which film is going to be added to our no copyright intended vault to be preserved for all time, even beyond the end times.
Let's do it.
So, without much further ado, I think it's time we get into our definitive rankings of the top five highest grossing films of 1995. Coming in at number five, with a whopping 31% on Rotten Tomatoes, Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls.
Ace Ventura is in Africa.
All right.
tiny there.
And Africa will never be the same.
Say uncle!
Jim Carrey, Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls.
Do I have something in my teeth?
Rated PG-13.
Ace Ventura, Nature Calls was directed by Steve Odekirk, written by Steve Odekirk. It is the triumphant return of Jim Carrey, last seen in Dumb and Dumber. It is the triumphant return of Bob Gunton, last seen in Demolition Man. And it was released November 10th, 1995, on a budget of $30 million, 20 of which went to Jim fucking Carrey. This movie made $212.4 million. What is your one-sentence plot synopsis?
Jim Carrey reprises his role as an animal sleuth to solve the mystery of a missing bat in this Naked Gun, Going Bananas, hodgepodge peep of steaming guano.
An obnoxious, toxic narcissist screeches his way through a paper-thin batshit caper amongst racist portrayals of Africans. This movie opens up with a cliffhanger callback, which you mentioned in some episode.
Yeah. The
only part of the movie that was even quasi-funny to me was the raccoon slowly falling to its death. It says a lot more about me than it does about this movie. And sadly, this movie was all downhill from there. Jim Carrey in the 1990s is one step above Jim Varney playing Ernest.
Oh my God, it's horrible.
This is easily could have been an Ernest movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You easily, this whole, you'd have taken this paper thin bullshit script and been just put Jim Varney in, it could have been the 17th Ernest film.
Yeah, what this movie was to me was they took all the things that worked in the first movie and tried to recreate it. And it just didn't work.
It's awful.
It just didn't work.
It's relentlessly obnoxious.
Jim Carrey didn't even want to do it.
I think you can kind of tell, man.
Yeah, he did not want to do it. He was obligated because of the contract he signed.
Yeah.
You could just tell he's just obnoxious. And he goes from being kind of a zany, borderline, obnoxious character in the first one.
Yeah.
To just over the top, buffoon, obnoxious. And I think Jim Carrey succeeded in this film by making a lot of money and by killing the character. Because he doesn't want to do sequels. He hates sequels.
Except for he's a Batman Forever. But so what you're saying is he doesn't want to make sequels to his own movies.
That's it. That's exactly it. He doesn't want to reprise roles.
Yeah, well. Thankfully, there was no Ace Ventura 3 except for the one spinoff they did with the kid.
Kid, who's like Junior.
Ace Ventura Junior or whatever that literally nobody saw. So the movie feels like it's a script that's been dusted off from 1983. I mean, it's
horrible.
It's truly straight to video material, save the fact that it's a sequel to one of the biggest movies with one of the biggest movie stars at that time. How this is a major motion picture, I don't have any idea. Honestly, the first four lines that were delivered by Jim Carrey, I immediately hated that character and hated the movie, and it never got any better at any point. And then they go into the racist caricatures of people in Africa. Like when you mentioned Going Bananas, it really is. It's of the same mentality as Going Bananas. Let's send a white guy over to Africa, and he's supposed to learn some kind of mystical African lessons while mocking this cartoony version of some culture for fake tribes that don't even exist.
And two fake cultures.
Two fake cultures with a bunch of Americans, including Tommy Davidson from
Living Color,
in Living Color and Def Comedy Jam, painted up like savages.
Yeah,
literally called savages, which is a term will come up again on this review. And I mean, it's offensive because it's both racist and it's not funny.
Jim Carrey didn't like it. And he's surprised that they haven't banned this film yet.
Is that real?
That's real.
It's racist. It's a racist fucking film.
He didn't like how the tribes were portrayed.
What tribe's major export is batshit?
Yeah.
It doesn't even make any sense.
How would you harvest enough?
One bat in one cave, one white bat has special shit that you make pottery out of, and that's...
Yeah.
I don't understand. And the, you know, him taking that girl's virginity as the end joke, being chased by both tribes of savages with a cartoon, is just not fucking funny.
It's not. No, it's not.
There's nothing funny about this movie. There wasn't one joke that worked. The only memory I had, ironically, is from you.
Yes.
And it's when he comes out of the ass of that rhino.
Which is noted.
I watched it, and it was funnier with you retelling that 20 years ago than when it was when I watched it.
I still laugh at that. But so
I didn't laugh at all.
Because I loved the first Ace, especially when I was young. I loved the first Ace Ventura.
Sure, so did I at the time.
At the time.
I haven't seen it in years, though.
I never really saw this movie that much.
I saw it one time and hated it. I saw it on video.
I actually didn't see that until years later. But this movie, it basically takes the mood of the first one and wipes it away.
Yes.
And somehow it's a spoof movie mixed with buffoonery. And that's it.
Yep.
I mean, the old one had references to a bunch of different popular, like, they had the Star Trek references. It has tons of references throughout it. But there's a difference between referencing films in a movie and spoofing a film in a movie. Because as soon as you spoof a movie, then I no longer take it seriously.
Yeah, it's a completely tonally different thing.
It's totally different than the first one. But yet they try to work, they force feed all of the old moments, the parking gag.
Yeah, he's got to talk out of his ass.
Yeah, talk out of his ass. The nuts, like the shells of the nuts. I mean, there's talking like a baby, doing the televangelist. All those things are beat for beat. Just, it's almost like they rearranged the entire first movie and changed the tone and had to work around Jim Carrey not giving a fuck and just basically just
trying to sabotage the movie.
His own movie.
Yeah, and somehow still ended up being one of the top five highest grossing films of the year.
Yes.
Which is just mind-boggling. The movie sucks. Listen, man. If the end joke of your movie is a guy getting raped by a gorilla.
Yeah.
If that's one of your final gags, you have no comedy chops.
You have no comedy chops. Yeah. The only thing you did is...
This movie's not funny.
You stole from the first one.
Yeah.
You stole from other movies.
Yeah.
To try to get... Which is a cheap laugh.
Yes. Like, very cheap laugh.
The party thing, the party scene. Yet all those were just... copy and paste in a worse way with someone who was trying to do his best because that was his breakout role, who actually they wanted Rick Moranis originally for.
Oh, God.
For the original Ace Ventura.
Which has been real weird.
Really weird. Yeah. And so now he doesn't want to do this movie anymore. And you're forcing him to. It just, the whole thing from front to back, the only part that I laughed still was the...
I'm crawling on the ass of a rhino.
Yeah, for whatever that's funny to me. It still is. There's no build up to the joke. It's just full throttle, full manic the entire time.
Yep. I didn't laugh at anything in this movie, so because of that, I give it a 1 out of 10, and it's the worst of the week.
I gave it a 2.4, 1 point for nostalgia, 1.4 for the rhino scene, and this is my worst of the week, ranked number 5.
Yeah, and this may be only the second worst performance of Jim Carrey this week, so.
Yes.
That tells you what we think about him. Moving on, it's time to review another racist movie, Walt Disney's Pocahontas.
Walt Disney Pictures invites you to discover an incredible new world of adventure.
Hang on, Thomas!
Where there's danger every day.
No!
New thrills at every turn.
He's missed! They got him!
Hey! Can you idiot!
And only a few have what it takes to become a hero.
I'm not about to let you boys have all the fun.
This summer, experience the excitement and feel the power of Pocahontas. Rated G. Starts Friday, June 23rd at a theater near you.
Pocahontas currently has a 55% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was directed by Mike Gabriel and Eric Goldberg, with a screenplay by Carl Bender, Susan Grant, Philip Lazebnik, and a story by 12 other writers. It is based on the real-life Pocahontas, sort of. This is, I think, the first appearance of Mel Gibson in the history of the show. So if you got your Binge Lord, Binge Movies notebook, write it down. It's not.
Lethal Weapon 3, buddy.
Oh, yeah, shit. So it's the triumphant return of Mel Gibson, last seen in Lethal Weapon 3, I guess. Tell you what I think about that movie. It is also the triumphant return of Christian Bell, last seen in the Dark Knight trilogy, long, long, long time ago. It is the triumphant return of Billy Connolly, last seen in Indecent Proposal. This movie was released June 23rd, 1995, on a budget of $55 million. It made $346.1 million.
The historically inaccurate account of a wise native woman and a woke male colonizer saving their respective parties from imminent bloodshed through love, open-mindedness, and self-sacrifice.
A white man seduces a teen native while helping colonists strip her people of their land and lives. Animation is pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
Pocahontas is gorgeous. I have no affinities for this movie. I was grown out of this shit by this point and was not watching these movies, but Pocahontas is... maybe has replaced Jasmine.
I was just gonna say that. Did she overtake Jasmine?
Yeah, better cheekbones, buddy.
I was just gonna say that. Complexion and cheekbones.
That's done. My wheelhouse.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Anybody that knows
strong
me.
Strong will woman.
Yep.
High cheekbones.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. 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 Long legs.
Check.
Check, check, check. Lackluster songs, man, though. As
yep.
gorgeous as she is, these songs fucking suck. There's one decent song, which is ironically, it's Colors of the Wind, which is about colonization.
Yes.
Like, you don't see any inherent value in anything but your own culture, and all you do is rape and pillage.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was, like, fairly progressive for Disney at the time.
I mean,
that was a mainstream hit that played on the radio.
Yeah, this movie is very progressive. You had your first interracial.
Yeah, sort of.
Well, I'm saying at the time.
Yeah.
We got to think back 1995, not now.
Mm-hmm.
You had first interracial couple for Disney.
Oh, yeah, very good
You
point.
Had your first princess that would actually be somewhat of a heroine.
Yeah, yep.
Even though I didn't think it would go too far. I thought she should have been more of the heroine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, at a certain point, she becomes very passive in this movie.
Yes. Yeah. Like, her biggest decision is, what man am I going to follow?
And here's the thing. Honestly, I think this may be the first time I've seen this movie all the way through.
Really?
Yeah. It just never spoke to me at all.
Yeah. I've marked the songs aren't that great, especially coming off the back of the likes of Aladdin
Lion King. This is the follow-up to The Lion
yeah,
King.
Yeah,
this is what they have.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Both of those movies back-to-back have great...
Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Lion King, and they fart this out.
Pocahontas. I didn't care about... The character I cared most about in this movie was Thomas.
Oh, Christian Bale?
Christian Bale's character, which I didn't realize until I was looking at it later.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think he should have read all of his lines in the Batman voice. It would make this more interesting. Gag him as well.
I think he's reading all these lines in his Newsies voice.
Yeah, very true.
I have some issues with the First Nations people's portrayal.
Mm-hmm. But hey, at least they use First Nations people, unlike Lion King.
Yes. That's
actors.
Very true. They got actual, yes, they actually got indigenous people to do the voices, which is, yes. I think at the same time, I think that this is sort of as valiant as an attempt as a corporation could do to deal with racial hatred and bloodshed.
Yeah.
Because they have a song where both sides see the other sides as savages. I think the problem is in 2020, we are now firmly against the side of the white colonizers.
Yes.
Whereas this movie wants to be like, well, they're both racist. There's good people and bad
people.
We
have to understand both.
Right. Both have their value, whereas now we're like, no.
No.
Nope.
No.
Man, there's no value in just coming in like raping and pillaging people.
Yeah, there's no value. There's no, yeah.
So... It was sort of pushing the boundary at its time, but I don't think it's quite progressive enough for where we're at now, 25 years later. I'm not sure why we needed a love story between the two.
I marked the same exact thing. I thought that the romantic relationship actually took away from the story.
And somehow they can speak each other's language because they're in love? Or magic?
Because of some kind of spirit.
But how does that work between everybody else in the colonizing group and the tribe? Because they are speaking to each other.
I have no idea.
They never touch on that.
Doesn't work.
This is maybe one of the all-time worst villains in a Disney movie, the governor or whatever.
Yeah.
Just an absolutely empty character.
You remember Ratliff? Yeah.
Yeah, and all the sidekick animals, unnecessary.
Do you know that there was supposed to be a turkey in it named Redfeather? And John Candy was going to voice it. But right as he was in the middle, he did a bunch of voice work for it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the animals were supposed to talk, but they thought people wouldn't take it seriously because there's more serious content in here.
Yeah, yeah. It's got some dark stuff in it. Yeah,
yeah. But he actually replaced Miko. And so he was going to be the turkey, and he's actually going to speak. John Candy was going to be a turkey. And then when
he passed,
they put Miko back in.
I think having a turkey called Redfeather...
That would not have played well.
Would not have held up.
You know, also doesn't play well. My little brother. This is one of my memories of this film. My little brother, because I'm just over the age. I've been 12, 13 when these movies came out.
Yeah, yeah.
But just over the age where I really didn't care about an animated film anymore. I just had to watch them because of him. But he had a raccoon skin cap that he wore all the time. And the song he liked most was the Savage song. So he would march around like wherever we would be singing that song. And looking back on it, look, we thought that's inappropriate, but at least it's like a 4-year-old.
Yeah.
Now that's wildly inappropriate.
It's wild inappropriate. Yeah. And the movie ends. Boy, here's the thing.
I hate the ending.
Of the four Disney movies we've covered so far of the Disney Renaissance, this is the worst by far. And the whole concept of, and the whites never bothered the noble savages again. Right.
Yeah.
Like all the white people, they just decided to go back to the colonies or back to England or whatever.
Not only that, is Pocahontas saved the day. She was the hero. Yeah. And somehow you had to recreate it where the white dude was the hero.
Well,
you could completely done away with that and make Pocahontas be the hero of the name of the title that was from her name.
Yeah, the movie is not called John Smith. It's called Pocahontas.
Let her be the freaking hero.
Yeah, but about halfway through the movie, she just takes the back seat.
Yeah, to John Smith, who I didn't care about. I didn't give a shit about John Smith.
No.
Never did.
Nope.
Never did. And why would this be the time that he changes?
Yeah. Doesn't make any sense.
Because he would have to reconcile all those people he killed.
Yep.
And all those people, because I've been to hundreds of places, which is hyperbolic, but, you know, he's been so many places, has killed so many quote-unquote
savages,
because I don't even like using that term.
No.
But we'll call them natives from now on. And so why would he all of a sudden turn? And if he did, he would have to deal with the guilt of what if other people were like that.
Because of a talking tree.
Because of a talking tree?
And a boner. He had a boner for Pocahontas, which I can't blame him.
I mean,
I'm a 3D man.
I might change my ways.
I'm a 3D man living in a 2D world, brother.
Yeah.
But I just, the movie stinks. So for me, I give it a 5 out of 10. I'm giving it basically a 50% essentially on the strength of the animation and them attempting to do something semi-progressive, kind of, for the time. Problematic, very problematic now.
Yeah.
Should probably just disappear from history. It's not only not quote-unquote woke enough, but it's also just not very good.
Yeah. Yeah. How I know it's a bad movie is I was watching it with my kids, and right about an hour into it was their bedtime. I told them to go to bed, and they didn't fight to stay up to watch the end of the movie. That's how you know it's not a good movie, which is why I gave it a 5.8. It came in at my number 3.
It's my number 3 as well. Let's move on to the third highest grossing film of the year, Apollo 13.
Universal Pictures and Imagine Entertainment present Tom Hanks.
Houston, we have a problem.
Kevin Bacon.
We're never going to get back.
Bill Paxton.
We're not going to have power much longer.
Gary Sinise.
It'll be a hell of a mission.
Ed Harris.
Failure is not an option.
Kathleen Quinlan.
What do you mean there's no immediate danger? Can it get back?
A Ron Howard film. Apollo 13, rated PG. Starts Friday, June 30th.
Apollo 13 currently has a 96% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was directed by Ron Howard, with a screenplay by William Broyles Jr. and Alan Reinhart, based on Lost Moon by Jim Lovell. This is the triumphant return of Tom Hanks from Forrest Gump. It's the triumphant return of Bill Paxton from True Lies. It's the triumphant return of Gary Sinise, also from Forrest Gump. It's the triumphant return of Miko Hughes, last seen in Kindergarten Cop. It's also the triumphant return of the director, Roger Corman, last seen in Silence of the Lambs. It's the triumphant return of Tracy Reiner, last seen in A League of Their Own. It is the triumphant return of Xander Berkeley, last seen in A Few Good Men. He plays Todd. It's not my mother, Todd, from Terminator 2. It's got music by James Horner, cinematography by Dean Cundey, who did a lot of the Carpenter stuff. We've covered Back to the Future, a lot of movies. It was released June 30th, 1995, on a budget of $52 million. It has made $355.2 million.
Three astronauts hurtling through the cold vacuum of space escape certain death by harnessing American determination and ingenuity.
That's pretty good. Three astronauts experience catastrophic technical failure on their way to the moon and must depend on NASA ingenuity and grit to make it back to Earth alive. I have no notes about this movie. Literally, my notes are blank. Because this fulfills a couple of things for me. One, it's proof that I'm getting old. Because to me, this is like the ultimate dad movie. It's a baby boomer dad movie, but it's a dad. Yeah. It's a dad movie.
Yeah, definitely.
This is something that you catch your dad or stepdad watching on TNT on a Sunday afternoon or Sunday evening, watching it for 4 hours because it's got commercials in it, right? And maybe even has a little tear in his eye by the end of the movie, right? It has none of the things that would have appealed to me in 1995, but it has a lot of things that would appeal to me now at my current age. I have said before, I like men, I mean that in a kind of neutral way, people on a mission movies, right? A team of people who have to pull together and think on their feet and things don't go right and they have to, whether it be more slap happy Ocean's 11 sort of movie, whether it be a more serious portrayal of a real historical event like Apollo 13, although this movie does have humor, or any sort of movie like that, right? Where there's a team of people, they got to figure, they got to think, and even The Martian's sort of like that, only it's just one guy, but there's the team back on Earth, right? So I like that. I like that. I like ensembles. I like movies filled with character actors and that guys and, you know, Mission Control, and it's a bunch of people that you've seen in other stuff, but you don't know their names, and, you know, it's period. It's a period piece. It's specific, and the movie even kind of looks like it was might have been made in the 60s. It did a really good job of recreating it. A lot of the CGI really holds up very well. And it's got like a 96% Rotten Tomatoes. This is the first time I've seen it since 1995 all the way through.
It's the first time I've ever seen it.
I think I've caught glimpses of it on cable, on TNT in the States, maybe 5 years ago. And I was like, oh, that's a pretty good movie. But I never got all the way through it. I remember basically my dad sitting me down saying, well, you know, you need to watch this as a history, son, kind of a thing. Not really being into it in 1995. And yet here I am. And, you know, it's a fairly lengthy movie. I think it's like 2.5 hours. It is just a very, very solid film. It's solidly acted. It is, the production design is very done, very well done. The special effects are very well done. There's humor in the right places. You feel the tension of the families and the people at home. The anxiety of, you know, one of the best scenes in the movie to me is when the engineers are like, how do we fit a square peg into a round hole? Literally, right? How do we get these two filters that are not compatible to work before these guys die of CO2 poisoning?
Yeah.
Right? And all of the, how do we figure out how to get these guys back in this little, from this little capsule that's not meant to support three people, is not meant to support to travel, and it's meant to land on the moon. How do we get that thing back to Earth? That's all the movie is.
Yeah.
Right? So there's not a lot to talk about per se, but it delivers on what it is.
Yeah. For me,
it's not schlock. It's not a Michael Bay movie. It's just a very solid, grown up movie with some decent humor and some, you know, it opens up with a joke about Kevin Bacon's character trying to seduce the woman, talking about docking.
Yeah.
Not cock docking.
Yeah, different. This is docking from the 90s, not in the 60s.
Not today.
Not today. Not current docking.
Not current cock docking.
The biggest success this movie had was I got just sucked in.
Yeah.
And the first part's a little slow because it's just building what's going on. It jumps a little bit because it has to.
It's basically informing you on what the space program is like for the guys who weren't Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong.
Yeah. But the movie really takes off when the shuttle takes off. Like that's when it starts to really hit its stride. And I felt like what it probably would have felt like, or had some type of what it would be like if you were in space and you're stuck there. It did a very good job of that. Even when they said when he was imagining himself walking on the moon, you could almost like, oh my God, that would be so weird.
Yeah.
The way he did things, he refused to use any stock film. He wanted everything to be, I mean, Ron Howard went out of his way to make sure all the feeling was right. Right, everything made sense. For the zero gravity, he was going to use wire, but Spielberg suggested a parabolic flight, which are those planes that NASA has that will go up 45 and down 45.
Yeah,
and so they did like I think almost, geez, I think like 600 flights or some, or not 600. They spent a ton. They did a ton of like takes, like 600 up and downs.
Yeah.
And so, like, they were, like, getting sick, but they went through all of the details. They end up spending more time doing those types of zero-gravity flights than normal astronauts would do to get that feeling.
But it's reflected in the movie, because the movie feels almost like a documentary, even though it's a movie.
Even though it's a movie. I mean, it has the most iconic line, probably, of that year.
Oh, for sure.
You know. People still use it. Yes. Houston, we have a problem.
Right.
Like, as I was watching it, and that round peg, like they had to think of this through. Because if you work with aerospace, they had to think things through. I understand why they did it. But I was like, they had to have that as a lifeboat be in their back of their head just in case something happened.
Would they have in the 1960s, though? Because they didn't give a shit about those guys.
They did. I did research.
Okay, all right.
Actually was confirmed. Right? I'm not going to mention something I'm wrong about.
Yeah, okay.
I'm Combat Jones. at least I know that I'm wrong about. They actually had that figured out just in case, and how to do it just in case. But you, to me, you're reaching for the moon, literally.
Yeah.
You're in space.
Yeah.
To me, you didn't need that add drama, but I get it, right? It's a movie. No one's going to pick up on it, and really the change in detail isn't that big of a deal. But the one knock I did kind of feel is I kind of felt like I was knocked over the head with that American can-do spirit. But that was the 90s. That was
it's
the
also the generation.
It's also the generation. Yeah.
But I think the movie is successful to me because I am not a baby boomer.
And I still care.
I was not alive for the space race. And that to me, that was almost ancient history, which now, I mean, you think about it, there's less time between when we landed on the moon and when I was born than there is between me and this movie.
Yeah. But I was in awe.
But it felt like ancient history.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, going to the moon felt like ancient history, even though, like I said, there was a shorter period of time between the first moon landing and my birth than there is me and this movie now.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
So it just felt like forever ago. It felt like it was 100 years ago when I was a kid. But now, not that it feels more recent, but it was able to, as an adult, I was able to appreciate it more. And the fact that we basically have destroyed NASA and have privatized space travel and just completely lost our standing in the world. You watch something like that and you're like, oh, yes, it's the American myth. Yeah, it's a little bit of propaganda and the hoorah spirit or whatever, like rah, 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 America. But I also kind of looked at it as just sort of more of the human.
That's true.
It's a rah-rah of human ingenuity and human intelligence.
I'll give you that.
You know, because I think when they recreate that scene, when they're watching the first, you know, the stepping on the moon, it's like one small leap for man, one giant leap for mankind, not for America.
Yeah.
Right? This is humankind. Mankind has accomplished something that was thought impossible. Yeah. We've taken a giant leap as a species. And so I think there is a bit of a, yes, it's American history. Yeah, it's a little bit of like pro-America, but it's also fairly critical of like NASA.
NASA's not going to tell us. Yeah. Yeah, like I said, it wasn't a huge knock.
Like, we're up here running our fucking own. We got to figure it out.
And NASA's not going to tell us.
Yeah.
That's why they're delaying it, because they don't know.
Yeah.
They're just telling us what
they're just trying to keep us calm.
Keep us calm, right.
Yeah. So I thoroughly enjoyed the movie. I don't have a lot to say about it because you just watch a movie. It's like very good. And what are you going to say? Like, well, that's very good.
Yeah.
So it's very good.
The other part I appreciate is they kind of grasped the humanity's tendency to take something that, even though it's dangerous and even though it's incredible that we're able to do it because we've seen it a couple times, now we don't care until something happens.
Yeah.
And they also kind of capture what it was like to be a woman in that time.
Yeah.
Where they're struggling. They're literally emotionally falling apart in back rooms.
And have no support.
And no support. But you know, you say you're happy, you're proud, and you're thrilled.
Yeah.
And then the cameras come on, boom, the character comes on.
Yeah.
So I thought they handled those things really, really well. And
it doesn't really matter that you don't want these people in your front yard, you know.
Yeah.
It's the old thing of like the salesman who would never try to sell to the wife. He'll say, is your husband home?
Yeah.
Right, because the husband controlled the purse strings mentality.
Yep.
Which the movie doesn't condone. It's just saying this is what it was.
This is what it was. It's almost in a...
This woman's husband is probably going to die and nobody gives a shit.
Yep. And they didn't care about when he's taken off. You know, so I don't care if you're here now. You need to leave.
Yep.
Right? So, and I thought it was they did a very respectful way of saying this is kind of the way it was.
Yep.
But these women were stronger than you think.
Yep.
Which I appreciate.
Yeah, me too. For me, I'm going to give it a 9.0 out of 10, and it's going to come in at my number 2 for the week.
I give it 8.3. It was a great film. I loved it. But I just, some of those things with engineering and stuff like that, because of my background, was a little harder for me to overlook. It's my second. It's my second of the week.
Yeah.
8.3.
That brings us to the second highest grossing film of 1995, a movie we covered a long, long time ago. 1995's classic, I guess. Batman Forever.
The criminal in question is accomplice in crime, a woman in danger, a partner in training, a hero in black. The adventure begins. Val Kilmer, Tommy Lee Jones, Jim Carrey, Nicole Kidman, Chris O'Donnell. Batman Forever. Rated PG-13. Starts Friday, June 16th at a theater near you.
Batman Forever was directed by Joel Schumacher, rest in peace, with a screenplay by Lee Batchelor, Janet Scott Batchelor, and Akiva Goldsman, who is notorious in this fucking show. It's with a story by Lee and Janet Scott Batchelor. It's based on Batman characters created by Bob Kane, We did a deep dive review on Batman Forever. It was our truly, honestly, our first hit episode where we got a lot of downloads on it. It remains of the classic canon of binge movies. It remains one of our best, I think. On episode 6, okay, so 70-some episodes ago, we covered this. Many, many years ago, too. It was released June 16th, 1995, on a budget of $100 million. It made $336.6 million.
Batman teams up with a 30-year-old orphan to save Gotham City from Two-Face, the Riddler, corporate tie-ins, and overacting.
A sad superhero teams with a 40-year-old acrobat orphan with attitude to stop two assholes who are trying to overact each other. I hate this new score by Elliot Goldenthal. The ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Why replace the Danny Elfman score? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's the most iconic Batman score to this day, and Hans Zimmer has never been able to replace it. This fucking Elliot Goldenthal has never replaced it. Nobody's ever replaced it. The two most iconic Batman songs are "Na Na 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 Batman" and the classic 1989 Batman theme.
Yeah,
it's perfect. You got the dude from Oingo Boingo. You got Danny Elfman, right?
Yeah.
Pre la 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 la. He does that in Batman Returns.
Oh yeah.
And he started doing it for everything, but. It's just, it's perfect. It is so perfect. Why fuck with something that isn't broken? I don't understand it. I don't get it. I hate the humor of this movie. I hate the dialogue of this movie. I hate the production design of this movie. I hate the performances. Everyone from the security guard, boiling acid, to Tommy Lee Jones, to Nicole Kidman, to Chris O'Donnell, to Val Kilmer, and especially Jim Carrey. I hate their fucking performances. The Riddler's entire origin is based on 3D TVs, which is a technology that's been every other decade they try to bring it back and it flops every single fucking time. Why do I give a shit about this guy's 3D TV scheme? I don't give a shit anything about this character.
The box.
What I feel for Jim Carrey is what Tommy Lee Jones said to him during the production of this movie.
I walked into a restaurant about, you know, the night before our big scene in the Riddler's lair, And the maitre d' said, "You're working with Tommy Lee Jones, aren't you?" I said, "Yeah, I am." And he said, "He's in the back corner. He's having dinner." I said, "Oh, great. I'll go say hi." And I went up to say hi, and the blood drained from his face in such a way that I realized that I had become the face of his pain, you know, or something. And he got up kind of shaking and hugged me and said, "I hate you. I really don't like you."
Oh my.
Wow.
And I was like, "Wow, okay. Well, what's going on, man?" Like that. And he said, "I cannot sanction your buffoonery."
He said, "I hate you. I really don't like you." And Carrie said, "What's the problem?" And he pulled up a chair, which probably wasn't smart, according to Carrie. And Tom Lee Jones says, "I cannot sanction your buffoonery." And that's how I feel about Jim Carrey. That's how I feel about his entire fucking career, save maybe two movies at this point. Truman Show and maybe one other one. I can't even think of another one. It's Truman Show. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Those are only two Jim Carrey movies that are worth a shit. Everything else is garbage, unless you have nostalgia for it.
Yep.
I was a huge Jim Carrey fan in the mid-90s. You couldn't tell me that anybody was funnier than Jim fucking Carrey. I watched him all the way back from when he played Fire Marshal Bill on In Living Color. Because I grew up watching In Living Color and not Saturday Night Live. I don't know why. We were a Fox family, I guess. Simpsons and Living Color, all that sort of stuff. Martin. This is what I grew up watching. So I love Jim Carrey. I love Ace Ventura. To say he's going to play the Riddler, I thought it was perfect. Val Kilmer is, whatever. They're going to put Robin in the movie. Whatever. But it's a continuation of the Batman story. I love Batman. He was my favorite superhero of all time. I love Batman. And I was a little disappointed by Batman Returns, but I still was still Batman. The Batman animated series was out. I was in full Batmania. And I go to the theater and I watch this fucking movie, and it was a nightmare. It was a nightmare of a movie. I didn't like anything about it except for the kiss by a rose. I didn't like anything about this movie. I hated the Batmobile. This is the ugliest fucking thing I have ever seen. This is the shittiest looking Batmobile. It is literally just designed to sell toys. You had the single greatest Batmobile from the Tim Burton movies. You got rid of it. You had the perfect Danny Elfman score. You got rid of it. You Keaton refused to do it. Tim Burton has a producer's credit, which I think is just an honorarium, basically. This script is awful. It's everything about this movie is ugly and hideous and obnoxious.
Yeah. Leo DiCaprio was kind of in talks with being Robin.
Yeah.
But he hated the direction. They wanted Robin Williams as a Riddler. But he was still pissed off about
the Joker.
The Joker.
Yeah.
But they
dicked him around.
Yeah. 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 And sometimes when you put it, just because.
Well, Marlon Wayans was actually paid to be Robin. He was supposed to be Robin in this movie. Right. He was on a 2-picture deal. They cut him, put Chris O'Donnell. So he got paid for this and Batman and Robin. He wasn't in either one of them.
Yeah, you have Jim Carrey, who...
He's supposed to be a mechanic who helped fix the Batmobile.
You have Jim Carrey, who's infatuated with Batman, but becomes his enemy, where he was hated bats, but became the hero in a previous film that we covered.
Well, he's fixated on Bruce Wayne.
Yes. Yes, who is Batman.
Yes. Tommy Lee Jones, Two-Face, is the one who wants to get Batman. They just don't know it's both the same person until they read his mind.
But you know,
thanks
this,
to Drew Barrymore.
You know this movie's going to be a pile of shit when you saw the screensaver entrance.
Yes.
And then what are the first lines of the movies, right? Can I persuade you into a sandwich, sir? No, I'll get drive-through. So, yeah, you knew it was
a joke. It's a fucking joke.
It was a joke that they knew they could put into a fucking commercial because they had that triple cheeseburger that was a hero size.
Superhero burger.
Yeah, superhero burger that they're going to put in later. So that was just for a corporate tie-in.
I have not seen this movie since I last reviewed it for this show 5 years ago now. If you want to know what I think about it, it hasn't changed in 5 years. Go back to listen to episode 6. Everything I said there applies today. We did a feature presentation review, did a deep dive on it. And we pick it apart, and I don't even want to fucking rehash it. The movie stinks. The biggest thing I want to talk about is HBO Max, which is a shitty title for a streaming service. It's not really HBO, but it kind of is. It's really Warner Brothers with HBO content. I don't know. They had HBO Go, HBO Now, HBO Max, HBO this, HBO whatever. They got HBO Max. And the big appeal of it was all the Warner Brothers properties under one roof, right? We're pulling this shit from Netflix. We're pulling this shit from Hulu. And it's going to be our archive. And Warner Brothers has been around forever. It's one of the last, the great major studios of the golden age of cinema. We're going to have all the classic films, Casablanca, you know, all the great Humphrey Bogart films, and all Singing in the Rain, all this shit, right? All these great golden era films, and all the DC stuff, and all of... you know, a lot of sitcoms, TV shows, anything that Warner Brothers has the exclusive rights to, it's going to be on this streaming service. And they're finally going to be able to watch all of the Christopher Reeve Superman films, all of the Batman films under one roof, assuming you don't own them. Great. Fire it up. They had the Batman films on their service for all of, I think, about 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And they pulled them all off and they threw Superman on there. Great. I love at least I love the first Superman film. I think it's one of the best superhero origin movies ever made. The original 1978. It's a classic film. It's very well done. Especially the first 25, 30 minutes of it. It's amazing. And I'm like, it's basically fraud. You've advertised this streaming service that we're going to give you all of our content for $15 a month with the sheer amount of content they're giving you. That's not that much money because it's almost what Netflix is, right?
Yeah.
And to me, Netflix is... take it or leave it at this point. There's so much garbage on there, and most of the original content to me sucks, to be honest with you. I keep it around for every 10 years, and I decide to put out a new Black Mirror season, which the last few of those have stunk too. So I'm like, I don't even know why I have it. I got rid of it. I brought it back for Tiger King because it was a lockdown, and what the hell else am I going to do is but sit here in my crusty shorts watching Tiger King like the rest of America. So I switch over to HBO Max because I'm like, great, I get all this content. They're already pulling shit off of there, including all of these movies.
Yeah,
so I had to pay fucking money to watch this goddamn movie.
Same here. I want to go pull it up, and it wasn't there.
It's bullshit.
It's bullshit.
What am I paying you for? Literally, the commercials were many of them centered around Game of Thrones, The Sopranos, and fucking Batman. And there ain't nothing but a Ben Affleck Batman on this service.
Yep.
Where did the rest of the Batman movie go?
Where's my Batman?
Well, Val Kilmer isn't my fucking Batman.
No, well, it's my Alfred. It's my Alfred.
There you go.
But it's not my Batman.
I'm like, where the hell is this movie? Like, where? I don't understand it. What is the point of having your own? To me, it's fraud. What is the point of advertising content that you don't plan on keeping up there? Why? And because originally the Superman movies were on there. I'm like, wait a minute. Where the fuck are the Superman? I guess some of them are like, I guess they would have been canon films. The canon doesn't exist anymore. So I'd imagine Warner Brothers would have had some of that back. So I don't know. I don't know if it's a contract issue. I don't know if it's a licensing issue. Why launch your service based on Batman, then pull the Batman movies? It doesn't make any sense.
I think you would have that figured out before then.
You would think so.
Because you just pissed off everyone who just gave you a try.
Yeah. I got it for this library, and even some of the classic films aren't on there. So are you going to be rotating them? Or just put the shit up there. If the movie's 70 years old or 30 or 40 years old, just leave it on there.
That's right.
It's supposed to be HBO Max, not HBO Occasionally. Fuck off. So I give this movie a 3 out of 10. It is my number 4. It's very close to Worst of the Week. I would say this is a worse performance from him than even in Ace Ventura: Nature Calls, because there's not a single moment in this where I can't stand him in this movie.
I don't like this film. I don't like this film. I gave it a 2.9, so very close.
Very close.
2.5 points for The Seal Song, 0.4 points for, because that's my Alfred. And comes into my number 4.
There you go. All right, let's move on to the movie we just did our feature presentation review on with Kevin R. Brackett from The Real Spoilers. Of course, we're talking about classic Toy Story.
Okay, everybody, coast is clear.
This holiday season,
it's showtime.
Turn on your imagination.
That's using the old noodle.
When toys come to life.
Boo, boo, boo!
Walt Disney Pictures presents the first ever computer animated feature film.
Code Red, we are Code Red.
To infinity.
Boom!
And beyond.
Toy Story, rated G.
Toy Story has a 100%, Rotten Tomatoes. It was directed by John Lasseter with a screenplay by Joss Whedon, Andrew Stanton, Joel Cohen, Alex Sokolow, with a story by John Lasseter, Peter Docter, Andrew Stanton, John Ranfit. It's a triumphant return of Tim Allen from The Santa Claus. And we got Jim Varney, who we may be doing a future retrospective on if we can continue to rope in Kevin from The Real Spoilers. It was released November 22nd, 1995 on a $30 million budget. It made $373.6 million at the worldwide box office.
A codependent cowboy and delusional space ranger come to peace with their new realities to save each other from being stranded with a sociopathic child.
That's so good, I might even read mine, because it's basically the same thing. I know I kind of pissed off the internet. Here's my thing. Okay, let's start with the pros. The script, I think, to me, strikes the perfect balance of charm and adult humor while remaining innocent and intelligent. It's child-friendly, but not pandering to kids. It's not childish, okay? But it's missing the more complex character elements and story narrative elements and, that's redundant, story narrative. But it's just missing the complexity and the development of the characters that we get in the later films. And the most interesting thing about the movie to me is going back and watching it and seeing... I'd say this is gonna be real controversial. To me, the movie's almost obsolete. It's a novelty to be able to go back and be like, here's the first iPod. I don't need iPods anymore, right? The first iPhone, iPhone 1 came out, I think, 2007, right?
Mm-hmm.
Literally, basically invented the smartphone, right? Before that was what, BlackBerry? But as far as the idea of smartphones, apps, where it went mass consumers, an app market, everything we take for granted now, which is all of a part of our daily life, that you don't even have to advertise. You know, there's an app for that. You don't need to advertise apps anymore. Everybody gets the concept now. You got four-year-olds with smartphones, right? Or tablets that are basically smartphones. You know, the first iPad, the first whatever, right? And maybe it's all Apple because it's Pixar or whatever. But same shit. It's like, okay, great, right? I recognize it has completely shifted a particular landscape of a technology. It's shifted the way that we live our life. It has shifted the way that we are entertained. I get it. But would I want to go back and use the first iPhone? Would I want to go back and pull out that first giant-ass block iPod? I mean, iPod would almost be kind of cool because it'd be retro. But,
yeah,
right? Like, it's yes, it has its place. Yes, it's groundbreaking. Yes, it took us to new frontiers. Yes, it's all of these things. But it's irrelevant because better models have come along. There are better Pixar movies than Toy Story. There are better Toy Story movies than Toy Story.
It doesn't mean it doesn't have a place.
No, it has its place. If you listen to the feature presentation review, I give it a 9.25 out of 10. It is my number one of the week, so I'm not arguing. I'm not, what am I going to say? Yeah, Batman Forever is better than Toy Story. I think it's better than, by a slight margin, than even Apollo 13 because of its historical place. At the same time, you know, the movie itself, right? You have to take all, when you review a movie, in my opinion, you have to take everything into consideration, which is you have to view each individual movie on its own. So if I give two movies the same score, a 9 and a 9, they're not based on the same thing. I'm not really comparing them against each other, right? I'm judging them on what it is they're supposed to be in terms of themselves. And I'm also, now we're going back 25 years, we're doing a nostalgic look at a movie, I have to take in its consideration of history. Is it fondly remembered? Did it make a huge impact? Did it change the landscape? Is it something that was a huge hit at the time or influenced at the time, but its influence has waned and it's now a forgotten thing? Was it forgotten at the time, but needs to be brought back, right? All of that factors into what score I give a film. So I am not taking anything away from its historical relevance and from what it helped accomplish and moving technology forward and moving animated storytelling forward for kids. It's basically, this has set the template and the standard for every animated movie that's come after it. And when you watch this versus watching Pocahontas, it's almost as if they're from two different decades, right? It's one is so far in the past and one is pushing boundaries to the future. So that's why Pocahontas isn't even the same conversation as Toy Story. But as a movie in and of itself, I find it lacking.
Here's what I think this movie does that the other Toy Stories don't quite do as well. This movie is able to draw out my inner child better than almost any other movie. Just the idea of toys come to life, that, because that's all you did as a kid, especially my generation, because I was a kid before video games.
Yeah.
Like, my height of toy playing when you're like 6 or 7 was action figures. So sure. The entire time you're sitting there and you're playing with toys, you're imagining them coming to life.
Yeah.
And so to see them actually come to life in a way that the plastic looks good, except on Bo Peep, because she's supposed to be ceramic.
Yeah.
The dog does not, people do not, but that's the technology of the time.
Sure.
But you can tell that is a little distracting. But when I'm watching it, that inner child comes out with, what if? Like, what if these toys actually came to life? What if they had personalities? I think it's a great film. The casting's spot on, as you guys covered before. I actually care about Woody and Buzz.
I don't.
I do.
I like them. I don't necessarily care about their plight.
I care about their fate.
To me, if you talk about what brings out the inner child, it's the later films. It's 2, 3, maybe even 4. It's really 3 as opposed to this one. This one doesn't do very much for me. It's not bad. It's humorous. Yeah. It's above board. It's better than most animated features. It's better than most movies. It is a classic. It deserves to be given all the respect that it has. But to me, it's just sort of like, it's just lacking a lot of the things that I like about the later entries in the series.
It doesn't have as much death as the other ones, but it's also introducing you to the world. And the world building is great. It never tells you the rules of the toys, but you know them.
Sure.
There's only one spot of real exposition where they're explaining Sid.
Yeah, so this is obviously your number one.
It's my number one. I give it 9.2 for all the reasons I just
said. So you're arguing, I give it a higher score than you by 0.05, and you're arguing as if I'm trashing it.
I think the difference is,
you're more enthusiastic, maybe?
I'm more enthusiastic.
I'm not.
And I always look on a little bit of the brighter side of life. And so you're just saying the points that people might have missed because everyone knows how good this movie is.
Yeah, sure.
And so I think that's the
difference. It's also my honest opinion.
I don't think you're doing it to be a contrarian.
No, about halfway through the movie, I decided to step out of the room and start scrubbing my shower.
You also don't like kids' films at all.
I was just sort of like, okay, I'm going to go, because I can hear it. So, and I've seen it a lot. So, I'm going to go scrub my shower.
I watched it with my kids, and they actually cared about seeing it at the end.
I used my crop preserver yesterday. So, you know, I had my Manscaped lawnmower 3.0. I was going to town. So, that leaves a bit of a mess in the shower. As I've run out of that newspaper that you're supposed to put down when you're shaving your balls, I do it in the shower. And it left a mess, so I had to go in there and clean it up. So I decided to clean my pubes rather than watch about a quarter of this movie.
So not only are we looking for a manscaping partnership, we're also looking for a...
There's already a partnership between me and my balls at Manscaped. We're also I'm just looking to get paid for it.
Snake drain partnership coming up here.
That thick Italian hair, buddy.
Yeah, it gets clogged.
It gets clogged in there, yeah. You got to keep it high and tight, buddy. High and tight. You do. Yeah. The ladies love it.
They love that buzz.
Men do.
They love that buzz when you get that Woody.
Yeah, men do too.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah. Listen, I can't shit. I'm not trying to shit on the movie. It's just I legitimately decided to clean my pubic hair up as opposed
to. It's kind of damning, though. You're watching the movie and you're like, you know what I'd rather do? Pick up ball hair.
It wasn't all ball.
Okay.
Some of it was chest. Some of it was happy trail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, whether you're doing the leaves or the grass, you still.
I did that and I bleached my bidet. No.
Bleached your bidet.
Yeah. It's self cleaning, but I also like to clean it myself. You know, that's legitimately what I did. Because I'm like, there's nothing.
Again, that's not a compliment to the film.
What? I'd rather clean my bidet.
I'd rather clean shit than watch this.
No.
I know.
The bidet cleaned shit. There was no shit on the bidet.
I'd rather clean the thing than clean shit.
Yeah.
Than watch this film.
Yep. Yeah, but it's 9.25 out of 10.
Which is higher than mine, yet I'm working.
Yeah. I graded it higher than you, and I was cleaning my bidet through most of the movie.
I say most,
but it really didn't take that long, because it's self-cleaning. So
yeah.
I just made sure it was bleached in the right spots, and because I with germs.
Not the pubic hair. Woo! I got through Toy Story 1, Toy Story 2, 3, the short films.
Batman Forever.
The Rex's Dance Party.
Seasons 1 through 5 of the Buzz Lightyear cartoon show. Yeah.
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 Even
looked like somebody shaved a German Shepherd in there. Rat Terrier, actually. Yeah.
Who had a black Labradoodle here? What's your recap, Jason?
My recap is coming in at number 5, the worst of the fucking week. Ace Ventura, Nature Calls. I give it a 1 out of 10. Coming in number 4, another terrible performance from Jim Carrey. Batman Forever, which I gave you 3 out of 10. Right in the smack dab middle of the road, number 3, I give to the very racist Pocahontas, which is a 5 out of 10. I then gave a very high score to a movie I haven't seen all the way through since 1995. Was quite a surprise by. I gave Apollo 13 my number 2 pick, and I also gave it a 9 out of 10. And, of course, coming in at number 1 is Toy Story with a 9.25, just slightly higher than Apollo 13.
Mine's not a whole lot different. Worst of the week by far, well, actually not that by far, but was Ace Ventura When Nature Calls with a 2.4. Coming in at 4, Batman Forever, 2.9. Right behind that is, right in front of it, is Pocahontas at 5.8. I had Apollo 13 at number 2 with a 8.3, and my number 1 film of the week was the classic Toy Story with a 9.2.
All right, it's time to give our recommendation of the week. What movie would you recommend for our binge lords at home?
I think everyone's seen Toy Story, so I would say Apollo 13.
Me too.
Go see that. You'll be pleasantly surprised. You'll actually probably have more nostalgia for the awe of space, how you felt as a kid, and for American history by watching Apollo 13. That's my recommendation.
Yeah, and if you're still staying home and doing what you're supposed to be doing, you need a couple hours to kill, this is the movie to turn on. On our very next episode, we're going to be going into a sudden death elimination movie death match. My short list is presently comprised of Avengers, A Quiet Place, The Apple, Seven, and Toy Story. And you're going to have to put a hodgepodge list together. You have to go back, figure out what everybody ranked, put it all on a list, decide which movie you're going to defend. You can only choose one. You can only pick one off of that list, which is mostly not your own. Go up against mine. And I think I know what I'm going to pick, but we'll find out on our very next episode, which will be the season 4.2 finale, as we do our elimination match to find out which movie will be added to our no copyright infringement intended vault for all time, even beyond the end times, which is pretty goddamn close from the look of it.
Right around the corner.
Well, until next time, enjoy. So fuck yeah.